You're listening to Filling Seats, the State of Enrollment Marketing in Higher Ed, hosted by StudentBridge. In this podcast, you'll learn what's working to grow, shape, and sustain enrollment at colleges and universities directly from fellow enrollment marketers, thought leaders, and ed tech innovators. Listen in for proven strategies to fill seats this cycle and beyond. Welcome to episode 3 of Filling Seats. In this episode, you'll hear from Mariah Hughes, who is the Director of Marketing and Public Relations at Eastern Maine Community College. You'll hear us talk about the importance of brand management and marketing at a two-year institution, how Mariah gets it done as a one-person marketing operation, how EMCC strives for access in its programs and offerings. Let's meet Mariah.
My name is Mariah Hughes, and I am currently the Director of Marketing and Public Relations at Eastern Maine Community College in Bangor, Maine. I'm originally from Massachusetts, and I ended up here because I went to the University of Maine, which is about only 15 minutes from Bangor, and I studied communication and marketing. When I was about to graduate, my capstone professor recommended me for a marketing coordinator position with the College of Liberal Arts and Sciences. It was a fixed-length role, and I really didn't know what I wanted to do, so I decided that would be great. I could stay where I was familiar and stay in higher ed, which I had interest in, but wasn't really sure at that time. So I stayed in that job for the year that it was set for, and it was an awesome job. And when I really decided I liked higher ed, it was perfect timing because here at EMCC, there was a marketing coordinator position that came up. So I applied for that. I was marketing coordinator for a little less than a year and a half, and they decided to restructure the marketing workforce and foundation world, which had all been housed under advancement. So when we did that restructuring, they promoted me to director. So I've been in the director role for 2 years, and it's an amazing school to work at. Working at the community college level is great because you get to work with non-traditional students, send people into really lucrative careers with little to no debt. So we have trade programs. We have 30 plus programs of study, whether it's certificate, associate, trade, healthcare, transfer option, all those fun things. So we have a lot going on. There's never a dull moment here.
How would you describe EMCC to someone that you're just meeting?
EMCC is a small to medium-sized community college. Right now, we have between 1,800 and 2,000 students. We serve the Bangor region, which is central to northeastern Maine. Maine's a very big state. People don't really think of it, but we're about an hour from Bar Harbor. Go 45 minutes in any direction. There's mountains, there's lakes, there's skiing, there's forests, there's ocean, the whole deal. So Bangor is right in the middle. And we have 30 plus programs of study. So we have trade programs, healthcare programs, many of which have direct to workforce pipelines with salaries ranging from 50,000 to 70,000 starting, especially in healthcare. Our nursing program is definitely our most popular program, and they get jobs immediately upon graduation and passing the NCLEX. So a lot of our programs do have graduation and employment rates similar to that. So we do trade programs, healthcare programs, as I mentioned, but we also have a really great network of articulation agreements. So students can start at EMCC and easily transfer to schools right near us. Husson University is right in Bangor as well. And the University of Maine is only 15 minutes away. So both of those schools, we have seamless and really awesome articulation agreements with. So we're happy to always send our students up there after they can take their gen eds. And our tuition is $96 a credit hour, which is crazy. Like, you can come here, and in a lot of our cases, our students have their tuition covered by grants, Pell Grant, need-based grants, mm-hmm. things like that. We also have our own foundation. So we give out around $100,000 a year in scholarship. So in a lot of instances, our students get out of here with no debt, and they either start with 2 years of school under their belt when they get to a four-year institution, or they go right to work. We're an open access institution. We serve non-traditional students. We serve students right out of high school. And we even have a couple hundred students who take our courses while they're in high school. And we have a couple programs where they can get a certificate and even a full associate's degree before they even graduate from high school. So we try to be innovative in our region and serve a wide array of demographics because our region is so large.
Tell me a little bit about the reporting structure of where you fall and within what department, because that's something, especially at community colleges, I find that marketing or public affairs, sometimes it's under different umbrellas mm-hmm. that you wouldn't necessarily expect.
When I was coordinator, I reported to the director of advancement, and she was in charge of marketing our foundation and workforce development. So when that was restructured, she was actually leaving the college. So they took that opportunity to reconfigure things. So I still report to now the dean of advancement, and I'm in what we call the Welcome Center, and the Welcome Center includes financial aid, admissions, and myself in marketing. I am the only one in marketing, but the way that we view marketing, and I think many schools do, is it's a service position. Being on my own, of course, I'm very busy in managing things for the college as a whole, but I also manage projects and different events for individual programs. So they might need a new program sheet, or they might be running a really interesting class and they want an ad to go out about it. So I act in kind of a service role to everyone, but I'm housed in our Welcome Center. So I'm part of our recruitment and our admissions. And that's where like the marketing really is with college recruitment. Otherwise, I do a lot of what I do tends to be like internal communication or external communication work or marketing for particular classes or new programs that we might have come up.
So you're wearing a lot of hats.
Yes. Yeah. Marketing at a community college, I think, is also interesting, where a lot of people don't get why a community college would need marketing in a lot of ways. But I manage our brand, I manage our website, I do our ads, all of our swag materials, everything like that. And then when you explain all of that to people, it's hard to contract a position like this out. You really need someone in-house to be working on it. And I would love to have a helping hand every once in a while, but everyone I work with is understanding and gets me all the information I need to be able to make my job more efficient.
So I'm curious, what's your response to that person when they're like, why does a community college need to market itself?
There's brand standards that need to be upheld. Any print material that goes out, a lot of the integrity of a college and the brand of the college relies upon having good materials go out. Something looks like someone made it in Microsoft Paint 20 years ago, they're not going to trust you as a college to teach their child or to teach them or to get them a degree. Making sure that everything's really uniform. And that's been one of my biggest initiatives coming into the college several years ago, was really maintaining that brand and making sure all of our flyers are up to date and all of our swag looks good and the right colors are used. And it might seem trivial, but the McDonald's logo, you know, McDonald's colors. If something was off when you pulled into a McDonald's drive-thru, you'd notice it. And it might seem like small things like, oh, it's just a color, or, oh, it's just a different font. What's the big deal? My response to those people is having this kind of conversation with them. And then people realize it, because marketing is everywhere. And, you know, people don't realize how pervasive it is in everyone's life.
What are some recent marketing wins or successes that your school has had in terms of enrollment, admissions, recruitment?
There's things that have come up over the last year coming out of COVID that have certainly been like, we've taken a hard look at getting mailers out and getting people physical things. And how can we bring more people to campus with keeping COVID in mind and all that stuff? But really, and honestly, it's one of the biggest impacts that we've had is the Student Bridge platform. When we got the virtual viewbook and the interactive map, it was huge for us. Like I mentioned, our region is, you can go an hour in any direction and, you know, they might live in a very rural population or they might be coastal, or we have a lot of first generation students in there. Either they don't have the time to come all the way to Bangor, or they're not sure where to start, or they've never been on a college tour before and they're dipping their toes in, and having that virtual piece, whether it's a link that they click on independently, where it's listed on our website or in any of our emails, or they have a virtual meeting with our admissions counselor and our admissions counselor is able to walk them through and click on different areas. And they might say, okay, well, I'm interested in automotive. And our admissions team will be able to share their screen, show them exactly where the building is, click in. And there's videos and photos. And it's just a really great tool to be able to manage kind of this in-between moment of, we can have people on campus, but we still have masks and we have to limit group size and we might not be able to get into every classroom depending on the day or the situation, but still being able to offer the convenience of an online tour, so to speak. So that's been one of our biggest successes and a really valuable tool for our admissions team to have. They go around to high schools and do on-the-spot acceptance and tours. So when they accept a high school student 20 minutes after meeting them, they're able to say, look, why don't you take a look at housing? Let's click through one of our residence halls and you can see if that's something you might want to look into. So we can see the visitors on our website. We can collect their contact information that they submit in one of those contact forms. So we're able to open up lines of communication with people that aren't even in Maine. That virtual platform has been huge for us over the last 6-8 months. It's been really valuable.
That really hits at that access, like you talked about. Have you seen enrollment growth through COVID, or what have those numbers looked like?
We'll be right back.
Want to know exactly how peer institutions are increasing enrollment? Check out three case studies in the show notes featuring three schools who've grown enrollment consistently over the past several years, including a private liberal arts college in Illinois, a small public school in Nebraska, and a large public institution in Georgia. Or visit studentbridge.com/resources to see how other institutions achieve more, like increasing campus tour numbers, engagement, yield, and beyond.
We had a dip in the fall of 2020, getting people to respond to X amount of texts and X amount of emails a day. And then you add on top of that, the non-traditional population that we serve in a lot of instances, their parents. And they might be single parents, or they might be living at home with their parents, or they might be on unemployment, or they might still have to go to work. And so that fall, we saw the loss of students from that aspect, which I think everyone did. But we also have a number of in-person hands-on courses. So where we're different from many traditional four-year institutions, you know, you can't learn to be a welder online. Like, it's just, you can't do it. Our building construction program, part of their curriculum is building a house. Every semester, they build a house for Habitat for Humanity. And you can't do that at home. So some students were able to say, I'll wait another year, or I'll just take a couple of online classes in the meantime. That's where we saw the hit was fall of 2020. But we've come back dramatically from that. We have a lot to attribute to that. We redid our admissions process. The point of acceptance was basically right after they finished their application. And we call it conditional acceptance, where we still need their transcripts and all that stuff. But that comes after we have that celebratory moment with them. So restructuring that and making a lot more systems automated, I think, really helped. But yeah, we're definitely coming out of it, which is nice.
What are some of the things that y'all struggle with in terms of marketing?
Right now, struggling with balancing the virtual events or virtual communication, whatever that might look like, whether it's an email or a text or a social media post, the engagement has been so different than it was before COVID and even in COVID. I'm seeing a lot of virtual burnout from students and from prospective students, especially the kids that are in high school now. They're into what, their like third year online. So we had a really good virtual open house last year. And we had like 150 RSVPs, which is pretty good for an event that we have. And that wasn't including any of the CTEs or high schools that zoomed in and had a big classroom of people. So we had a lot of folks in attendance for that one. And we had one in the fall and we barely got 50 RSVPs. And out of that 50, we had maybe 30 or 40 people show up. And we didn't do anything out of the ordinary. We did what we did and then some for copying our marketing campaign from the prior year. And it's really attributed in a lot of kind of word of mouth is they don't want to sit on a computer screen. They're envisioning college like their way to get off of the computer and go somewhere and be in a classroom and have that experience. And so the virtual and Zoom burnout has definitely been a challenge for me right now. And then just general ones that become a destination of sorts recently, where we see a lot of people moving to Maine. Cost of living is rising. We come up with every year, or we encounter every year, is the changing population in Maine and the changing population of the people that we serve. We serve a rural population. So in a lot of ways, they might not have great cell service. Some of them don't even have internet. So being able to reach those people that are quote unquote unreachable is always changing. And we're always trying to be creative with ways to reach those folks. And yeah, just reassessing each year with every campaign, what population is this reaching and who could we reach next time, or who can we add to that demographic? So always being creative, because we do serve everyone. You know, the traditional high school student can be sitting in the same class with a 50-something year old who worked in a mill for 25 years and then decided they wanted to be a medical assistant. So we have to always be balancing that, which can be a struggle, but it is always interesting, to say the least, to figure those things out and navigate those changing aspects of our region.
So what are some of those creative things that you've come up with?
We've started doing courses that can be taken at distance sites. So one of our off-campus sites is the Katahdin Higher Education Center, and they're in Millinocket. And because our nursing program was so popular, they were able to have seats in our nursing program an hour away from us, and they're placed in clinical an hour away from us. So where you would normally come to Bangor and then get placed in the Bangor area, or placed wherever you're from, but you'd be coming to campus here, you can now live up in East Millinocket, which is another hour north of us, and take nursing classes and get your clinicals right in the hospitals 10, 15 minutes down the road from you instead of coming all the way to Bangor. And being able to market a program like that that has such a specified audience, we've filled that up each time that we've put a new cohort out. So being creative and in getting more specific with those audiences and really capitalizing off of the opportunities that workforce development and having those satellite campuses and satellite buildings really afford to us. So taking advantage of everything and every opportunity that we have and turning it into, you know, more students in seats and more students getting a better education.
What do you think are some of the biggest misconceptions about enrollment marketing?
Some of the biggest, especially in community college, that it's very singular. Like you're in your own little bubble, just making ads, firing them off. And that's really not at all what marketing at a college or community college is. Like I said, I wear a million different hats and I think of myself as a service to the college. The chair of our medical assisting program, she's my client. How can I help you? And what do you need from me? And how can I help you do this better? So I think a lot of people think of marketing as like flashy and you're kind of doing your own thing, but it's really you're entrenched in every aspect of the college. I think in COVID, it was even more prevalent for me. Like I just noticed it more because we'd get on big campus-wide Zooms where we'd have pretty much all faculty and staff on them. And people would always be like, oh, I haven't seen so-and-so for a while. And it's been so crazy. I haven't worked with so-and-so. And I'm like, I have worked with every single person on this call last week alone. I think people don't realize like how even just little things, people will send me flyers to approve and I'll just have to remind them, hey, our affirmative action statement has to be on there or the logo isn't sized correctly. And just little things like that built all the way up to let's redesign my landing page for my department on the website. And those aren't one-off meetings or projects. They're very long-term and ongoing. You end up just having to balance so much. And I think people in other areas of marketing can see that in a lot of ways in business and other realms, but it's not always apparent in the community college or just colleges. You know, we're not just throwing money away. We're really making sure that the appropriate messages are going out about the college and our programs and that I'm doing everything that I can to make sure that every program has what they need to be successful and to be a good representation of the college.
What are some things that you think other higher ed marketers are not doing a great job with?
There's not one thing that stands out to me. And I think that's because every college and every region is so different. Like what I could look at, even like Harvard, I'm like, that campaign, that I don't get it. That's not what I would have done and blah, blah, blah. But it's also, I'm not talking about the same audience. Even remotely. You can criticize something that someone did or look at it through a different lens, but at the end of the day, like their judgment about their college and their audience is already going to be leaps and bounds ahead of anything that I could even assume about their audience or their college. So I think for me, it's just every college and every institution is so different. Even just between our community colleges in Maine, we're so different than Southern Maine Community College or Northern Maine Community College were vastly different. And even our audiences vary. So I couldn't think of one specific thing for that reason.
Can you describe any of those differences? And maybe you don't have to say the school specifically, but I'm just so curious to know more about that.
Pick on Central Maine Community College. They're great. They actually helped us restructure our admissions process to be more similar to theirs because they've done a lot of this work. But they have sports teams. So they have a lot of sports recruiting and a lot of their recruiting is from what I understand in my conversations with them and my colleagues who work very closely with them is their high school recruitment is a lot stronger than say ours is where we have a more non-traditional audience. So between the two where we both have good sized campuses and we both have residence halls and we have some of the same programs, they might focus more of their marketing on the high school and on something like move-in day and accepted student day, where we're trying to look at a non-traditional audience who might be balancing kids, jobs. So they obviously have that population as well, but where we don't even have to think about sports marketing or sports events or anything like that, they obviously have that as a component. And they're looking more at recruiting those high school age students, and that isn't our bread and butter, so to speak.
What are some things that you think other higher ed marketers are doing a great job with?
There's always like an air of enthusiasm no one's super excited to be on Zoom and no one's loving talking about COVID and regulations. That's just part of our job and part of what we have to do in order to keep our communities safe and our college safe and up and running. But no matter what message people are promoting or getting out there, there's always, you know, this level of positivity and that a college, no matter where it is this really special place to be. And that kind of attitude I haven't seen falter at all in any higher ed advertisement or announcement, whether it's positive or negative. And I think that's just always a good foundation to start at, no matter what your message is, keeping that air of positivity around it. And I think I've seen a lot of schools do that really well with some really hard situations that they're in, especially because it's not just COVID, it's mental health issues of their students that come out because of COVID. It's having to quarantine people because of COVID. And I've seen a lot of difficult posts and a lot of difficult situations from other schools that luckily we haven't necessarily had to deal with. But there's always an air of positivity and being there for your students to help them through what we all know is an unprecedented time.
What do you see for the future of higher ed marketing?
That's such a good question. Marketing, I feel like you're just always playing catch up. You're reading different articles about the new best thing, or you thought sliders on a website were great. No, they're not. There's always a study on something that came out 2 years ago saying how bad it is now. I have no idea. I think the best thing that marketers can do and that I will do and continue to do is keep an eye on kind of those changing trends. Look at what leaders in the field are doing. Like I said, we don't have the same audience that an Ivy League school would have, but if they just relaunched their website, let's take a look at it and see what they did to see maybe, is there a reason they structured their menus like this, or what's their landing page look like? And even just doing that for like 10, 15 minutes a day is super helpful. And you do see a lot of things change, like sliders on a website. Our website was redone, I think, 5 or so years ago, and it definitely needs a rebrand sometime soon. So we're trying to work towards that. But when they did the website, one of the things they said was great was sliders. And I've been reading so many articles that are like, sliders are not very useful. This is why, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, why? Okay, I'm so intrigued now.
It's a lot of visual that doesn't actually say a lot. So like a lot of visual that's actually captivating is great, but a slider with two lines, people aren't driven to click on that. And there's been studies with like heat mapping on websites where people just don't click on it. And they'd either rather go to a menu or search something instead. It's very interesting, people's perceptions of websites and how intuitive they are versus like how much action you have to take, which the golden rule is, you know, less action a person has to take, the less clicks to get to something, the better. But with new softwares and with new website design, it's constantly moving and constantly growing. And just even just hearing about those things or reading an article about them can help you inform your next decision.
I think in a way, you're fortunate that you're a one-person show because you don't have to argue with people above or below you to make decisions. You're empowered to be able to do those things on your own. You can figure, oh, sliders aren't working, and you're able to make that change. I used to work at an institution that was a big state school, and I was in enrollment marketing, and then there was central marketing. And at one point, we realized that it took 9 clicks from our homepage to start an application because you had to navigate through top-level pages, then to the admission site, then into the application.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's the thing. It's always time. But yeah, being able to make those recommendations, and especially in the marketing department of one, but I'm fortunate that I work so closely with our director of admissions and director of financial aid. And my boss as well is super supportive of those kind of innovative changes and things that we can do to make our students' lives easier, because that's what we're here for. And going back to the demographic that we serve, we might have someone who doesn't even have a cell phone. They might not have internet at their house. We don't want to confuse them with menus and bury information, and we want to make everything as easy as possible for them.
What is an app or a marketing tool that you could not live without?
There's so many, but I think the one I use the most often and that I think tends to be the most valuable in terms of usable data after a campaign is Constant Contact, and really any of the mailers. I've used MailChimp before too, and Constant Contact's just what I've been using since being at EMCC. But being it's so easy to segment all of your contacts and fire off a mass email to a list of students that will use it to contact students who have withdrawn or students who only have an application half complete and be able to send them reminders, and it makes it just so easy. And I'll use it for, we have a weekly newsletter as well that goes out to a couple thousand people each week, just things that are going on in classes and maybe a new partnership or a scholarship donation, things like that. And just being able to share that every week, let alone all of the other marketing communication we do from that platform, it's pretty invaluable. And you get to see who opened it, what they clicked on, any link they clicked on, who unsubscribed, your segments for all of your different lists. It's a pretty basic tool, but it's very valuable when it comes to email marketing and capturing that data on the back end.
Have you utilized any of the analytics from that platform or any other to inform decisions for future email strategies?
Yeah. So we know if we're sending an email to a pool of non-traditional students, so maybe say age like 25 to 45, and that's only part of them, but we know that they end up clicking on that link in their email versus that age demographic clicking on it in a social ad. So we know that in emailing them that link via Constant Contact or really any email, but we know that they'll click on that link more if it's in an email with X, Y, and Z language structure, as opposed to as a social media ad, that's just a big image. Like, check out our map. Being able to look at that age demographic and see what their behavior is. So that informs where we place that link and also the targeting that we might do on a social media ad. So if I was going to do a social media ad promoting that map, then I might make my target range a bit younger because I know that in the past, that social link hasn't performed well in that age demographic, something like that. And then knowing where to place it on the website and where to place it in an email.
If you could go back 5 to 10 years and give yourself advice, what would it be?
The only thing I would tell myself would be to start my master's degree sooner, because I'm in it right now. I'm doing an online program with SNHU for communication and public relations. Mm-hmm. And I just started it like 6-7 months ago, something like that. But there's multiple terms. And now that I'm super busy and in this director role and managing all the things that we've already talked about here, it would be just such a nice feeling to have it more done than it is now. But that's the only thing I could come up with. I think a lot of things that have happened in my life that led me to this point in my professional life, I wouldn't have done any differently. I love living in Bangor. I love working at the community college. And even in college, I don't think I would have necessarily picked higher ed as a field, but I chose it because it was comfortable. And in that kind of comfort, you're able to do so much and explore so many different areas of higher ed, which there's so much in higher ed that people don't see all the time or even really know about.
If you could change anything about higher ed marketing or enrollment, what would it be and why?
It would be nice if we had the opportunity to be more proactive. And I think that opportunity is reserved for schools that generate a lot of revenue at the community college level. We have a fiscal year budget, but it's a really month-to-month situation. I stay on top of our budget, make sure our spends are where they need to be to get us to the next month, or make sure that if I overspend in 1 month, I have to really underspend in another. And my budget is very limited. I don't have a staff working underneath me or with me where that's not a problem at a private four-year institution that has millions of dollars worth of endowment and things like that. So I don't think there's a way to necessarily change that. Our tuition isn't ever going to skyrocket to the point of being at the level of a four-year institution or a private institution. But that's what we're here for, is to offer that low tuition and easy access for these students. And even if our enrollment doubled and tripled, we can't house all those students. And our campus is pretty large, but we'd have to make serious infrastructure changes. So it's hard to see an easy solution for it. But if anyone has a spare $1 million lying around, I'm your girl. But it's one of those things where it makes you more innovative and it makes you more creative. And in a way, it's good because we have that one-on-one personal connection with students that I think in a lot of larger institutions is hard to have. So there's positives and negatives to it, but being able to be more proactive in a lot of instances than reactive would be great. That obviously takes money and takes team and takes time.
In a day, you're telling an instructor that they need to fix a logo because it's resized misproportionately and looks bad. And then how do you also have the time in the day to sit there and think strategically, big picture? You've got a lot on your plate and a lot of things to keep moving. So I definitely feel that.
Some days feel crazier than others, but I'm a very calendar-oriented person. So I always block a few hours off to review our ads or create new ads and really just focus on those things for those larger projects that do take time and you really need to focus on, and you can't be popping over to your email and fixing something really quick and then jumping back. So it's a lot of balancing.
This is the Filling Seats podcast, hosted by StudentBridge, where we help enrollment teams achieve more by fusing authentic storytelling with industry-leading technology and personalized digital experiences. If you're looking to attract more, amaze more, and achieve more, visit studentbridge.com. To connect with this episode's guest, check out the show notes. If you enjoyed this episode, leave a rating and review, and don't forget to subscribe. For more information about the podcast or to let us know you'd like to be a guest, visit studentbridge.com/podcast. Thanks for listening.